Thank you, Mr. DeVilbiss. Good afternoon to everyone on this beautiful Sabbath day. We've been having some very nice weather. I'll take it. You know, I could live here all the time if we had weather like this all the time. Nice seeing you. A little light today as far as the attendance, but, you know, of the many bad habits that we try to overcome as we move forward to become more like our Heavenly Father and His Son, Jesus Christ, is conquering the improper use of the tongue. Controlling the tongue is arguably the greatest task that lays before us in our quest to conquer the works and the poles of the flesh. In the third chapter of the Epistle of James, the Apostle provides a lengthy dialogue of the use of the tongue. So let's turn over to James 3, chapter 3 and verse 2. We'll start there. Chapter 3, verse 2. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. You know, James compares an individual that doesn't offend others in word, in what they say, as a perfect man or woman, as they are able to bridle or control the whole body. He uses the word bridle to enforce the idea of controlling the tongue, as a bridle is used to control a horse. We're all familiar with the bridle that they put on a horse. He states in verse 3, "Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body." You know, a horse is a very strong, very large animal, and yet with a very small tool of the bit in their mouth, we can control them. The rider is able to easily turn the horse to the left or to the right, or keep it straight. In much the same way, if we watch our speech so that we will not offend others, we will be able to bridle or control the whole body, our thoughts, and keep us from going off the left or off to the right. You can say off to the left or right ditch, but keep us going straight on the narrow path, which all Christians must traverse. James goes on to illustrate how the helm or the rudder of a ship, being very small, can control such a large vessel. He says in verse 4, "Behold also the ships, which, though they be great and are driven by fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm or rudder, whenever, wherever the governor or the captain wants it to go." He goes on to say in verse 5, "Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasts great things." We have all witnessed how a person may boast or proclaim proud statements. Boasting can often, and often does, cause offense. Most likely by when they're boasting, they're in the process of putting somebody else down in order to exalt oneself. James continues, "Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles." He equates the tongue, when not properly controlled, to cause destruction in much the same way as a little fire that may start small, but can quickly expand to engulf an entire building or even a forest. Continuing in verse 6, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. you know, James compares the tongue to a world of iniquity, all-encompassing. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body. Matthew Henry's commentary of this makes the following comment, quote, "There is such an abundance of sin in the tongue that it may be called a world of iniquity. How many defilements does it occasion? How many and dreadful flames does it kindle? So is the tongue among the members that it defiles the whole body. Observe, hence, there is great pollution and defilement in the sins of the tongue. Defining passions are kindled, vented, and cherished by this unruly member, and the whole body is drawn into sin and guilt by the tongue. Therefore, Solomon says, suffer not thy mouth to cause the flesh to sin." Quoting from Ecclesiastes, end quote. James continues there. He says, "And sets on fire the course of nature." What is meant by the course of nature? Matthew Henry stated, "The affairs of mankind and of societies are often thrown into confusion, and all is on a flame by the tongues of men." A lot of the problems that we've experienced in our societies down through the ages have been caused by one group of people being mad at another group of people, one leader saying one thing to another leader, causing great wars to occur. Continuing with what Matthew Henry said, "Some read it or interpret it, all our generations are set on fire by the tongue. There is no age or history of the world, nor any condition of life, private or public, but ill afford examples of this," end quote. "And it is set on fire of hell." The word hell here is the word Gehenna. Only used about 9 times in Scripture. Oftentimes the word hell is translated from the word Hades, which is interpreted the grave. You know, if not properly controlled, the tongue could lead to our ultimate destruction. Continuing in verse 7, "For every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind." Verse 8, "But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." Verse 9, "Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men." You know, have you ever gotten mad at someone who may have cut us off in traffic or some other inconvenience? Which are, continuing with what James is saying, "which are made after the similitude or the likeness of God." Verse 10, "Out of the mouth," out of the same mouth, "proceeds blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be." Verse 11, "Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter?" In other words, can good words and bad words proceed from our mouth without defiling us? Verse 12, "Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom." James expounded quite a bit on that tongue issue, which we all possess. We all possess a tongue, whether for good or bad. Now, I came across a photo when I was going through some items, listing 20 items titled, When to Keep Your Mouth Shut or Don't Open Your Mouth. Now, there's 20 of them. I'm not going to read all of them. But it was put out by an individual with the byline, Proverbs 31 Wannabe. So you could do a search on Google if you wanted to find that listing, When to Keep Your Mouth Shut. And I kind of rearranged the list because down through the list, it was skipping around back and forth between a verse here and a verse there and a verse here and a verse there. And it'd be a lot of flipping back and forth, but I kind of rearranged them in order. The first one started off with number one, when to keep your mouth shut. When you haven't verified the story. And it quoted Deuteronomy 17, verse 6. Deuteronomy 17, 6 is talking about at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall he that is worthy of death be put to death. But at the mouth of one witness he shall not be put to death. In other words, if you haven't verified that something is true, don't pass it along as true information. I know at times I have posted things on Facebook or something, and I thought, oh, this is a great post. And then later somebody comes back and says, Tom, better check that reference of yours. It's not true. So, you know, you got to quickly go out and pull it off Facebook so that, you know, it doesn't look bad, right? In ancient Israel, the consequences of spreading false rumors or lies were a life and death matter. You know, the commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness, as someone's life may hang in the balance by being a false witness in a trial. Number two, when you are tempted to tell an outright lie. Well, you know, we don't want to lie. That's, you know, the ninth commandment once again. But reference Proverbs 4, verse 24. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. Number three, when you would be ashamed of your words later. Proverbs 8, verse 8. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. Another one, when it is time to listen, that's a good time to keep your mouth shut, when it's time to listen. Quoted Proverbs 13, verse 1, a wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. You know, often when people are given instruction or correction, they will try to justify their actions and will often talk over the person giving the instruction. That's not a good time to be talking when they're trying to tell you how to do something or how to correct something. Number five, when you are tempted to joke about sin. Proverbs 14:9 states, fools mock at sin. They make fun of sin. But among the upright, there is favor. Another one. If the issue is none of your business. Proverbs 14, verse 10. The heart knows its own bitterness. And a stranger does not share its joy. You know, sometimes it's best to keep one's nose out of other people's business or other people's affairs, unless they come to you and ask for help. In the heat of anger, sometimes it's best to keep our mouth shut in the heat of anger. Proverbs 14, verse 17 says, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. You know, one who is quick-tempered often blows off steam by turning the air blue around them, by justifying their actions, or blaming the problems that they're experiencing onto others. Here's another one. When you're supposed to be working, keep your mouth shut sometimes when you're supposed to be working. In other words, Proverbs 14:23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. It seems that things don't get done sometimes because people are standing around talking about what needs to get done instead of actually doing what needs to be done. Here's another one. If your words will damage someone's reputation, quoting Proverbs 16, verse 27, an ungodly man digs up evil, and it, evil, is on his lips like a burning fire. We talked about how in James talked about the tongue being like a fire. If your word would convey a wrong impression, Proverbs 17:27, he who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. That's just a few of the 20 items that were on that list. You can always look them up if you wanted to. It's easy to find. You know, there is one at the very end of the list, and it was saying, if your words will be a poor reflection of the Lord or of your friends and family. And was quoting Peter 2, verse 22 to 23, and it's in reference to Christ, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Verse 23, who when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. And Christ is our perfect example of the proper use of speech. He was not afraid to correct when correction was due. He always would lambast the Pharisees, righteously, of course, but he told them their faults. Proverbs 15:23 states, a man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, or at the right time, how good is it? So there's proper use of the tongue, and we all know there's quite a bit of improper use. Also, in Proverbs 26, verses 4 through 5, verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like unto him. And then in verse 5, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. Sounds like it's contradicting. But what it's saying basically is, there is a right time to respond to criticism, and there is a wrong time to answer. And all requires wisdom and judgment on our part so that we know when to answer. You know, there's much in the book of Proverbs related to what to say and when to say it. And I encourage everyone, you know, to go through the Proverbs. Maybe this month in December, we got 31 days. Well, we're off two already, so we got 29 days left. But if you were to read a chapter in Proverbs every day over the next month, it's a nice refresher to do. I'm going to attempt it. No guarantees, but I'm going to attempt it. In Proverbs 6, verse 16 to 19, Proverbs 6, verse 16 to 19, these six things does the Lord hate. Yes, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. Verse 18, and heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift into running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Here we see that three of the seven things that God hates involve the use of the tongue. The last item, sowing discord among brethren or causing division has been a cause of a lot of problems within the church down through the ages. Paul corrected the Corinthian church for having divisions among the members. In Ephesians 4 and verse 29, we read, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." Paul exhorts the Ephesians to speak only good words by which the brethren could be built up, edified. You know, we need to focus on building up one another. The world does just the opposite. The world tears down other people. Satan is always accusing the brethren. He's constantly trying to tear us down before God. You know, by building people up, we edify them, that they may minister grace or be of good use, or they could be informative and instructive. And we can even be corrective if necessary. But how we go about that correction in a manner that's not offensive is our responsibility to give counsel unto the hearers. Just counsel, wise counsel. Jumping down to verse 31. "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor." Matthew Henry had this to say about clamor: "Big words, loud threatenings, and other intemperate speeches by which bitterness, wrath, and anger vent themselves. And evil," continuing with verse 31, Matthew Henry said, "signifies all railing, reveling, and reproachful speeches against such as we are angry with." So, continuing in verse 31, "Be put away from you with all malice." You know, malice, we are to understand, is rooted in anger and prompts men to design and do mischief to others, according to Matthew Henry. To which Paul gives the antidote in verse 32. "And be kind to one another." Be kind to one another. Matthew Henry stated, "This implies the principle of love in the heart and outward expressions of it in an affable, humble, and courteous behavior. It becomes the disciples of Jesus to be kind one to another as those who have learned and would teach the art of obliging, tender-hearted," meaning merciful, "and having tender sense of the distresses and suffering of others, so as to be quickly moved to compassion and pity, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven us," forgiven you. Matthew Henry said here, "Occasions of difference or disagreements and strife will happen among Christ's disciples." It'll happen from time to time. There will be disagreements, strife. Will happen among Christ's disciples, and therefore they must be placable or tolerant and ready to forgive, therein resembling God himself, who for Christ's sake has forgiven them, that more than they can forgive one another. Note, with God there is forgiveness, and he forgives sin for the sake of Jesus Christ. And on account of that atonement, which he has made to the divine judgment. Note again, those who are forgiven of God should be of a forgiving spirit. Right on time, after about 25 minutes, my voice goes out. And those who are forgiven of God should be of a forgiving spirit, and should forgive it even as God forgives, sincerely and heartily, readily and cheerfully, universally and forever, upon the sinner's sincere repentance, as remembering that they pray, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." You know, Paul exhorted the brethren in Colossae in chapter 4, verse 6, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer every man." You know, how we speak and respond to others will make all the difference in our lives, and how we get along with others and how they interact with us. Being kind, considerate, and courteous will go a long way in how people will treat us in return. Concluding in Proverbs 25, verse 11 through 13, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver, as an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a proper reprover, corrector, upon an obedient ear." Verse 13, "As the coal of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refreshes the souls of his masters." You know, let's all become gracious in our speech by showing one for love enough, by showing love for one another. How we respond to people's comments, how we respond to people's offenses, will go a long ways in the world to come. And by doing so, it will bring us all together in the unity of love.